Chapter 26. The Cage. Drusha crept onto the gantry. The light from the cage was blinding. It burned his skin. The sound of the voice burned his mind. There was no one around, no sign of anyone. He scurried over to the cage. He could feel the awful heat of it. Eisenhorn was rigid. He was kneeling, and the light was shining through his skin and from his eyes. Every muscle of his body was locked and seized. The chain of the cuffs binding his wrists was pulled tight. Only his mouth was moving. Unwords dribbled from it like blood from an open wound. "Eisenhorn!" Drusha called. He banged on the bars of the cage. "Inquisitor! Can you hear me?" He tried the cage door. It was locked shut. Of course it was. "Eisenhorn! Talk to me! How do I get you out of here?" Drusha felt an odd, bubbling sensation in his head.
"Leave me."
"Eisenhorn?"
"Leave me here."
Eisenhorn's mouth was continuing to speak unwords in a non-stop stream, but his mind was speaking separately. "I'm not leaving you," replied Drusha. He paused to spit out a locust that had flown into his mouth. "I said I wouldn't, so I won't. How do I get you out of here?"
"You don't."
It was a cage sealed with an unword, just like the ones he had released Max and Vorier from. He'd figured out how to do that. If only he had a bullet left. "Can you open it? Eisenhorn? Eisenhorn, listen to me. Can you open the cage door? Use one of your words and open it."
"Can't."
"Why can't you?"
"Busy."
"Don't talk nonsense. Busy doing what?"
"Weaving. Building up power. Put out the fire."
"The fire?" asked Drusha. He brushed away the locust forms flying around his face.
"Gablika said, snuff the fire. Save the loom."
"What? You're following his orders now? Eisenhorn!"
"It's almost done."
"Why? Why bother? This thing should burn. It's a heretic engine, right? Right? Eisenhorn!"
"A heretic engine."
"Then why are you trying to save it? Stop! Unlock the cage!"
"What's happening?"
Drusha glanced up. Vorier was standing beside him, swaying with effort. "He won't come out," said Drusha. He's trying to put out the fire. Save the loom."
"What?"
replied Vorier. He knelt down beside the cage.
"Sir, Inquisitor, it's Dara Vorier. What are you doing?"
"Saving the loom."
"Why?"
asked Vorier.
"Because I have mastered it. The cognite, they have shown me how. They have shown me everything. Dara, I can use this."
"Use it? Sir, what are you saying?"
"I need to save the loom."
"He's gone mad," said Drusha.
"I need to save the loom. I have control. I can use it to annihilate the arch-enemy. Finally. And forever."
Vorier looked at Drusha.
"He's not mad," said Vorier. "That's too small a word. He's completely insane."
Nail slowly got out from under the cogitator bank. He kept his useless transvasor aimed at Da Vinci. Da Vinci had frozen side onto him, his las pistols raised. He was staring at Nail out of the corner of his eye.
"Really don't move," said Nail.
"Just shoot me then," replied Da Vinci.
"Drop the guns. Do it. Toss them over the rail."
"I don't think so."
"Do it,"
snapped Nail. "Why don't you shoot?" asked Da Vinci, not moving.
"Toss the guns."
"You had the drop. A clear shot," said Da Vinci. "But you didn't take it. No way you want me as a prisoner. Taking me back for trial and punishment?"
"I don't think so."
"So why didn't you shoot?" Nail moved closer.
"Drop the guns over the rail now," he said. "This conversation is beginning to bore me."
"You can end it any time," said Da Vinci. "One shot. Except you didn't take the shot. You know what I think?"
"I don't care what you think."
"I don't think you can," said Da Vinci. "You'd have done it by now if you could." I think your gun's out." Nail edged a little closer. Another step and he'd be able to lunge and finish the business with his hands. He thumbed back the hammer.
"Toss the guns," he said again.
"A hammer works even on an empty gun," said Da Vinci. Nail saw him starting to smile slightly. That confident look he'd seen so many times in his bruising life.
A barely imperceptible micro-expression. That tell that gave away the fact a man was about to make a move.
Da Vinci snapped around to shoot. Nail was already diving. He slammed into Da Vinci and body-tackled him against the rail. Both las pistols discharged, sending bolts streaming into the air. Nail slammed Da Vinci's right wrist into the edge of the rail, and the las pistol tumbled away into space. Da Vinci tried to bring the left-hand pistol around. He fired again, and two shots scorched into the deck. Nail put his full strength into keeping the man's left arm back. Nail shoulder-barged Da Vinci in the chest, pinned him against the rail, and drove the heel of his right fist into Da Vinci's left thumb. Da Vinci screamed in pain. His remaining las pistol went flying down the deck. It bounced and slid to a halt 4 meters away. Da Vinci caught Nail under the left ear with a jab. Nail stumbled back, clutching his head. Da Vinci seized him by the front of his jacket with both hands and threw him into the cogitator banks. Nail landed badly, fragile cogitators shattering under his weight. Da Vinci came in fast, driving punches to Nail's face and chest. Nail raised hasty forearm blocks, stopped two, and took a fist in the side of his mouth. He swung hard for Da Vinci, but missed. Da Vinci turned and ran for the fallen gun. Nail pounced and brought him down hard on the deck. They grappled. Nail had mass on his side, but Da Vinci was quick with his legs. He hooked his right leg and flipped Nail off him. Nail got up, only to take another glancing kick to the face. He stumbled sideways. Da Vinci bounced his rangy body onto its feet. Like a dancer, he threw a high spin kick that hit Nail in the chest and staggered him backwards. Da Vinci reversed his spin and threw another kick from the opposite direction. Nail barely blocked it. Da Vinci stayed on his toes. He spun around with another kick, almost in pirouette. Nail blundered backwards.
"Try that shit again," he thought.
Da Vinci tilted his balance slightly and whirled into another spin kick. Nail caught him squarely by the kicking ankle. He locked it, twisted his grip, and threw with full force. Utterly overbalanced, Da Vinci sailed backwards with a scream and went over the rail. Somehow he held on. White-knuckled, legs swinging, he clung to the cross-struts of the handrail and began to haul himself back onto the platform. He was half over the rail when he saw Nail facing him, aiming the fallen las pistol.
"This one isn't out," said Nail.
He put 4 las bolts through Da Vinci's head and torso. Da Vinci swung backwards stiffly, like a falling drawbridge, and plunged into the darkness. Goblika dragged Max to her feet. He'd slung his auto-rifle across his back and drawn Eisenhorn's Scipio. He pulled her against him, his arm around her throat, and put the muzzle of the pistol against her head.
"How many more?" he asked.
"Go screw yourself," she replied.
He tightened his grip and made her choke.
"Let's walk," he said,
shoving her along. A shield was useful.
"You've got a friend up here, a bald guy. He'll be pleased to see you."
His dry laugh died away. Ahead of them, an animation was stepping off the connecting staircase and turning to walk along the control deck towards them. It was Blake. Green light shimmered around his dead flesh. 2 more followed it, Cronil and a halting, slower skeleton. Goblika froze.
"I'm a friend," he yelled. "Back away!"
They kept coming.
"Back away!" Goblika ordered.
He shouted an unword order of command that stung at Max's ear. The animations did not falter. Goblika switched aim from Max's head to Blake. He fired, and the shot dropped Blake in his tracks. Max seized the moment as soon as the gun moved away from her head. She elbowed hard into Goblika's gut, then lashed out, clamping the top of Goblika's right wrist with her left hand and driving her right hand up into his tricep. The force almost bent his elbow the wrong way. Goblika shrieked, the Scipio flying out of his hand. Max tore free from his grip. The Scipio bounced once. She dived for it. It bounced a second time. She grabbed at it and missed it by a hair's breadth. It disappeared over the edge of the deck. She knew she was done. The animations were right on her. She curled into a ball, her legs tucked under her, her hands over her head, and waited for the horror to end her. Nothing happened. She looked up. Cronel and the lurching skeleton had moved past her, ignoring her. They were making straight for Goblika. He stared at them in horror, eyes wide.
"Back off! Back off!" he yelled.
He tried more unwords as he wrestled to get his rifle off his shoulder. Max got down as flat as she could. Still yelling unwords, Goblika hosed Cronel and the skeleton with bursts of autofire. The furious volley ripped across the control deck stations, but left the advancing animations untouched. Goblika turned to run. Max saw his staring violet eyes as he broke to flee. She had never seen terror like it.
"Why not her?" he cried. "Why not her?"
Goblika ran to evade the reaching hands of Cronil and the skeleton thing, and found Audler Jaff, slack and loose-limbed like a hanged man, advancing from the opposite direction. Her ruined dead face blank and tilted to one side, Jaff embraced him. A moment later, Cronil and the skeleton reached him too, their hands on his back, on his shoulders. Goblika began a scream, but it faltered and broke. Green sparks like a raging swarm of insects whirled around him, spreading from each point of contact, each clasping hand. As the sparks spread, Goblika vanished. His clothes shredded away and became dust. His living skin turned to paper and withered like powder and ash. Beneath, tissue and muscle and fat rendered down, exposing bones that deformed like melting wax. In less than 10 seconds, Goran Goblika was reduced to a few misshapen bones and a deformed, stained, screaming skull that fell to the deck between the three animations and lay smouldering and sparking. The animation stood over the steaming heap for a moment, then moved on without reaction, disappearing down the curve of the platform. Max rose to her feet, shaking.
"Marshal!"
She turned. Nail was limping towards her. He looked like he had been kicked and punched repeatedly. He was carrying a las pistol.
"What happened?"
he asked. She brushed locusts away from her face.
"I think the rules just changed, Nail," she replied.
"You have to stop, sir," Varier said. "You have to stop this now."
He was slumped against the bars of the cage, too tired to do anything except speak, too weary to brush away the locust forms that were settling on him and crawling on his face.
"Listen to him!" Drusha yelled through the bars.
"This is a chance. The Cognitae have handed it to me. I won't waste it."
"To do what?" asked Drusha. "Use their machine against them? To achieve what?"
"An ending."
"To what?"
"The Long War. The Primordial Fight."
"What are you intending to do, sir?"
asked Vorier.
"Control the fire. Then increase the rate of the loom. Unpick a hole in the warp. Open one space into another. An extimate fold. Between here and Queen Mab."
"What is that?" asked Vorier.
"The City of Dust. Another extimate space, I think. I'm going to open it wide and engulf the King in Yellow. Unmake him. On his own loom. Uncreate him, word by word."
"Sir, this is a heresy that must end," said Vorier. "You are employing devices and powers beyond our understanding."
"I understand."
"Do you? Do you really?" yelled Drusha. "Or is this just the obsession coming out again? The old drive, the old desperation, the old craziness that doesn't recognize when it's time to stop?"
"You are outspoken, Valentin Drusha. You are ignorant."
Drusha kicked the bars of the cage. "You're the one locked in a magical frigging cage trying to unpick the fabric of reality," he yelled. "I'd rather be ignorant than crazy." He looked at Vorier. "Unpick the fabric of reality near enough?" he asked. Vorier managed a shrug.
"I think pretty much, yeah."
Drusha knelt down and stared through the bars.
"I'm not ignorant," he said. "I'm very knowledgeable, educated. I'm smart enough to know my own limits. Do you know yours? Do you know when a good idea stops being a good idea? Do you know what too far looks like?"
"Enough, Magos."
"What happens when you do this?" asked Drusha. "Does Kestra collapse? Do you die? Do we die?"
"Perhaps."
"We came back for you," Drusha snarled.
"I did not ask you to."
"You did, actually. You asked for my help," I asked for yours, but you refused. That's all right. But I said I'd come and help you. Now you don't want my help.
I don't need it.
So, tell me what happens when you do this, said Drusha. Some kind of cataclysmic cosmic event, I shouldn't wonder. Continental upheaval, planets imploding, stars blowing out. Another long night? Am I close?
The king will die.
Fine. What else? Drusha asked. How many people die here on Gershom if you do this? How many people in, what was it called, Queen Mab? How many innocents? How many children?
Eisenhorn's mind did not reply.
Who is Beta?
Asked Vorier.
I don't know, Drusha replied. But the name was just in my head, too. Did that feel like sadness? Regret?
Vorier nodded.
Eisenhorn! Drusha yelled at the cage. What else happens? You can't know everything. What are the consequences of a catastrophe like the one you're trying to create? You're messing with space and reality, splitting them open. Talk about ignorant. No one knows about that stuff. If you damage the universe that badly, does the damage stop? What if it spreads and you can't halt it?
The king will be dead.
Oh, well, as long as the king's dead, that's all right, said Drusha. You know what, Eisenhorn? You know what? I don't think you know anything. Or you don't care. You're about to execute a dreadful act of destruction, and you have no clue what the consequences will be. What if you break reality forever? Break it so it can't heal or repair. Rip it open. So what if the king's dead? That will be it. You'll have destroyed the very thing you've spent your life protecting.
I know what I'm doing.
I don't think you do, said Drusha.
Make us, Valentin. I will open a door, an exit out of Kestra. You get out. Take Vorier with you, Max and Nail too. They live still. I have done my best to protect them. Get out, and I will try to contain the damage I am about to do. I will contain it. You will live. Please, get them. Get out.
Drusha rose to his feet. He flicked insects off his face.
He doesn't understand, does he?
He asked Vorier.
He doesn't understand people.
I don't think it's ever been part of the job description,
said Vorier.
Do as he says, Drusha. Find Max and Nail, and get out while you can. I'm a bit tired. I'll stay here. Sit with him until the end.
Not an option, said Drusha. For throne's sake! But for a bit of wax and a custom bullet, I could open that cage. I've still got the bloody gun.
He produced the empty little Regit snub from his coat.
See?
He stuffed it back in his pocket, despairing. His knuckles touched something else in his pocket. He took the gun back out and reached in.
Vorier?
What?
I miscounted, said Drusha. I took a bullet out of the gun to open your cages. Max never put it back in the clip when she reloaded it for me.
He held out his hand. The bullet lay in his palm.
7 shots, he said. Not 8. I miscounted.
Vorier blinked in surprise.
We don't have any wax, Magos, he said.
Balls to that, said Drusha.
He did what he'd seen Nail do. He drew back the Regit slide, opened the firing chamber, and slipped the bullet in. Then he snapped the slide shut.
Step back, he said.
Vorier struggled to his feet.
Magos, what are you?
Step well back, Vorier. I'm not very good with guns.
Drusha took careful aim
and fired.